This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Michael Tomczyk, sitting in for Mike Collins. The number of independent voters in North Carolina has roughly doubled over the past decade. They now make up 27% of registered voters, according to the State Board of Elections. This morning, we're going to examine who they are, why their numbers are increasing, and what that means for North Carolina. Michael Bitzer is a political science professor at Catawba College and author of WFAE's The Party Line blog. Michael, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Eric Spanberg is a senior staff writer with the Charlotte Business Journal. He covers government, the business of sports, and a variety of other things. Eric, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
And Jim Morrill is a political reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Along with Michael and Eric, he's also been a frequent guest on Charlotte Talks. So guys, all of you and Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
So let's start with the growth of independents. Michael, could you give us more detail on how their numbers have changed in the past decade?
Yeah, I mean, if you look back in the past decade, the growth of unaffiliated voters in North Carolina has been something astounding. If you go back to 2004, Democrats were about 2.4 million, and they've grown about 15%. Republicans were about 1.7 in 2004. They've grown about 15%. Unaffiliated voters were a little over 900,000 in 2004. Right now, they're sitting at about 1.8 million. So almost a 97% increase. And it really has been a dramatic change in terms of voter registration. The big question is, just because you register to vote, does that necessarily mean that you're going to show up to vote?
And off that increase, I mean, they're now the independents would make up the majority party in, I mean, it's not many counties, but a couple of counties, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, in over half of the counties, unaffiliated voters are now the second largest registration group in that particular county. And Mecklenburg has experienced that as well. So, I mean, this is a phenomenon that is with us to stay and probably will grow in intensity as well.
Jim, have you been able to tell if this increase has resulted in different sorts of conversations as you're out and talking to people for your political stories?
Well, I think that people are, they're independent for a reason, because they're, frustrated with both political parties, both main political parties, you know, and there's an irony to this, too. I mean, as the number of unaffiliated voters has increased, the number of elections that are decided in partisan primaries has increased, too. I mean, there's so many elections now that are decided in the primary. If you live around here, take the 9th District, for example, the 9th Congressional District, it's basically a Republican district. So is the 10th District and some others. And if you live in the city of Charlotte, you know, it's a Democratic city anymore. That's often usually decided in the Democratic primary. So I guess to some extent there may be a cause and effect, the number of unaffiliated voters, because you can, if you're unaffiliated, you can vote in either party's primary.
But not both.
So
you have to pick one.
So it's sort of a dichotomy. I mean, you have the growth of the independents, but you also have more and more elections decided in a primary.
And do we have an idea of how often independent voters actually do decide to vote in a primary?
It's very rare. I mean, most of the numbers that I've seen in terms of May primaries, they are traditionally the partisans who show up. I think in May it was less than 20% in both Democratic and Republican primaries that had unaffiliated voters. The vast majority of them are registered partisans, either registered Democrats or registered Republicans.
And Eric, I guess that gets to a point, which is there's a difference, or can be a difference, between an unaffiliated voter and a swing voter, right?
Yeah, there's a big difference, because a lot of times people will go unaffiliated, but they still are very loyal to a party. They're either, they tend to vote with Democrats, they tend to vote with Republicans. And people will tell you, in fact, what Jim was just talking about, a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm independent or I'm unaffiliated because I like to be able to decide a primary. But truth in fact is they don't. And in fact, unaffiliated voters tend to be much less reliable to go to the polls than someone who is registered as a Democrat or Republican. And so you can see very quickly how this gets complicated if you're running a campaign, because you need these voters, but you can't really tell which way they're going to go and how reliable they're going to be.
And we'll get more into how these voters could potentially swing or maybe not show up this November a little bit later in the show. For now, let's look at Mecklenburg County in particular. How have the numbers changed here?
In terms of Mecklenburg itself, about 45% right now are registered Democrats. Registered unaffiliateds are 28%, and registered Republicans are about 26%. So here in Mecklenburg County, unaffiliateds have already overtaken Republicans. And in the city, it's even worse. If you look within the Charlotte city limits, it is much more Democratic, much more unaffiliated, and very few Republicans in comparison to what we see in the state as well.
And would that be, would you see a similar picture in Wake County with Raleigh? Is this another example of an urban-rural sort of divide?
Yeah, I mean, that is the divide going on in North Carolina politics right now. It is very much an urban Democratic core versus really a rural Republican core. And the suburbs are kind of the swing votes in terms of how both parties participate. But certainly counties like Wake, Forsyth, Guilford, Buncombe, Cumberland with Fayetteville, all of those counties are experiencing this kind of Democratic dominance within the city limits. It's when you get outside that you start to see the suburbs be much more Republican and rural counties surrounding it very Republican. But even here in Mecklenburg County, that's starting to shift. I looked at some of the outlying city limit precincts, and those are starting to become kind of swing precincts. They used to be reliably Republican, so you're starting to see the Democratic creep go out into the suburbs as well.
And how much do the increase in independent voters play into that? Are we also getting, for example, more independent voters in cities as opposed to, you know, in the rural areas?
They are growing, but Democrats are by far the powerhouse in terms of registered voters in these urban areas.
So it's not necessarily that cities are driving the independent growth.
Right, right. And part of it is also what Eric and Jim alluded to, in that really if these are true pure independents, they are kind of up for grabs, and maybe they show up and maybe they don't. But in the research in political science, if you say, well, I lean one way or I lean the other, you are just as partisan, if not more partisan, than some of your true diehards within the party. So that's something to think about.
Well, I had somebody tell me something interesting last week when talking about this was John Hood at the John Locke Foundation, which is a very conservative group. But he was talking about how just as a whole in society, people are much less willing to be members of anything, whether it's a church, whether it's a club, and that politically, this is just sort of following that trend. And like you're saying, Michael, there's also the dissatisfaction with the partisanship. Even though you may believe strongly in Republican values, you're not happy with the way Republicans are carrying it out, or same thing with Democrats. And so you say, I'm unaffiliated, and then you vote for your party.
Yeah, I mean, the parties have become very much more ideologically coherent. They are very clear in terms of their policy differences. I mean, 60 years ago, political scientists wrote a report that said there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two political parties. Mm-hmm. Well, now there is a lot of money that is differentiated between the two political parties. And that, you know, for some folks who are more moderate in their ideological span, tends to turn them off from time to time.
And off of Eric's point, we did a show earlier this month about the rise of people who don't affiliate with any particular religion. Do we know if there's much overlap between those folks and independent voters?
Well, in terms of religion, certainly there's this thing called the God gap. I mean, if you generally tend to attend church at least once a week, if not more, you are much more likely to be Republican. If you don't attend church that often, you're much more likely to be Democratic. So there is something going on. There's a lot of threads interconnected with this in terms of human behavior.
And do we know if the Republican or Democratic parties are losing registrations in equal numbers, or is one winning essentially in what's happening here?
I actually looked at the 2012 numbers and looked at the end of last year and looked at the defectors. And it is certainly those folks who are switching their parties are going much more to unaffiliated status in the numbers.
I think it depends on where you are. I think in the city of Charlotte, I think Republicans would be losing more to the unaffiliateds. Charlotte races, political races, used to be, you know, kind of up for grabs. You know, we had a Republican mayors here for a long time, Republican city councils in the past. Now you just don't see that. And so I think you know, for whatever reason, people are moving out of Mecklenburg. Republicans are moving out of Mecklenburg County. But I think a lot of the newcomers are unaffiliated, both because it's sort of a pox on both your houses attitude, and also because if you're unaffiliated, you can choose which primary you vote in, and you have a little bit more choice.
Well, I think, though, it is interesting. Republicans must be losing more party affiliation, because when you look at 2.8 million Democrats, 2 million Republicans, and 1.8 million, that would make you think that Democrats would dominate in this state. And clearly, that's not what's happening as we look at the legislature and the governor's race.
Exactly, because you've still got that legacy of old Southern conservative Democrats for all intents and purposes, are Republicans. They just never change their party registration. Now, they're starting to die out. That generation is certainly growing older. And I think what we're seeing, particularly under 40, is the traumatic growth of unaffiliated is occurring there. And Republicans have to be very concerned about their lack of growth within that dynamic age group.
And I want to revisit a point Jim brought up, which was, so some of this increase is also just how fast our state is growing, I guess, right? We have so many new people coming in. Perhaps some of those are registering as independents as opposed to, you know, we have this base that's static and either one party or the other is losing it.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, obviously the growth is, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I mean, the growth is substantial. All you have to do is look at the apartments that are being
exactly
built around Charlotte to see how many people are coming in. And, you know, if you're a newcomer, it makes sense to be independent, to be unaffiliated. You don't have a stake with either party in the state. You're not you don't really know where the parties are coming from locally here, so why not
well, and,
be independent?
And particularly when you're talking about the millennial population, which just tends to be more unaffiliated anyway. And then we're talking about Charlotte and Raleigh are two of the fastest growing areas year after year, certainly the past decade they have been. So all that feeds into that dynamic.
And that growth of people coming from outside into the state of North Carolina is shown in some of the numbers I looked. For unaffiliated voters, only 35% said that they were born in North Carolina. So among Democrats, it was 48% born in the state, and for Republicans, 44%. So we're seeing a pretty good influx, particularly from states like New York, Virginia, New Jersey, and South Carolina coming in.
We have a comment from Susan in Waxhaw. She says she's a lifelong Democrat, moved to Union County from the Northeast in 2006. It's a heavily Republican area, and it's clear that due to gerrymandering, according to her, it always will be. But anyway, she says that she actually decided to switch her affiliation to unaffiliated so that she can vote in the local Republican primary to try to have a voice in town, because she feels like as a Democratic voter in a Republican place, she doesn't have much of a vote. But I guess by the numbers, someone who's putting that much thought into it would be more the exception than the rule.
I mean, if you look at and you know this much better than I do, Michael, if you look at the data, that simply is not happening on a frequent basis.
Yeah.
And do we have an idea of, so we have this huge increase in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Do we have any sort of idea of how that compares to what's happening nationally?
Well, a lot of states don't register their voters by specific party affiliation. South Carolina doesn't. Virginia doesn't. So North Carolina is kind of odd in terms of actually asking the voter to declare a party registration. Nationally, we do know through things like Gallup and the Pew research polling that the rise of independents has been the story for the past decade, that in fact Gallup is probably seeing about 40% of their polling surveys show that people are identifying as independent. Now, when you push them, that number drops to about 5 to 15% as pure independents. And we can talk more about the kind of lean folks in terms of independents as well.
And we'll get in a little bit more into that in just a minute. We'll take a short break first. You are listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the British International School of Charlotte, empowering individual achievement for students aged 2 through high school, hosting an admissions open house Thursday, October 9th. Details at britishschoolofcharlotte.org. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, the Middle East has been a focus of world concern for years. The latest concern is of the terrorist group ISIS, the so-called Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. They've beheaded Westerners and have called for all Muslims to kill disbelievers. Recently, leaders of Charlotte's Muslim community met to send another message, the condemnation of violence by ISIS, calling their vision a false picture of Islam. We'll explore that further with some of those same leaders when Charlotte Talks, tomorrow morning at 9, here on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a growing number of countries are joining the U.S.-led fight against ISIS. Why many say a broad international coalition is critical in the effort against one of the world's most well-funded terrorist groups.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk and for Mike Collins. We're discussing the rise of independent voters in North Carolina. Catawba College political science professor Michael Bitzer is here, along with reporters Jim Morrill of the Charlotte Observer and Eric Spanberg of the Charlotte Business Journal. You can also join the conversation. What do you think is driving the surge of independent voters in our state? What does it mean for the state? Email charlottetalks at wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter. And guys, what do we think is driving this increase in North Carolina? Jim, you've talked a little bit about what you hear from voters as you're out talking to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, people are disaffected with both parties, you know, and so you want to be independent. You want to, and you also want to keep your options open for the primaries that we talked about. So, I mean, I think that plus just the influx of people coming in from out of state who, you know, decide to be independent.
I think people also like to – by the way, there are three unaffiliated voters on your panel.
In journalism, I know it's fairly common, so we probably stack the deck a little bit.
We stack the deck. But I do think that people like to be able to say, look, this is not me. You know, when – whichever way you lean, if you're a Democrat or Republican and they're doing all these ideologically, extreme things or what you feel to be ideologically extreme things, say that four times fast then you can sort of step back and say, well, you know, I'm unaffiliated and I vote for the candidate I prefer, but I don't engage in sort of these partisan antics.
I think part of it is also ideological. I mean, the country as a whole is about 40% moderate. That's what they consider ourselves, more conservatives than necessarily liberals. But we're kind of a center-right, and I think the state is also kind of one of those center-right states. And the parties, because they have become ideologically coherent, really has changed the way that people perceive the parties. I mean, we don't have these things called Southern Conservative Democrats anymore, and we don't have these things called Rockefeller Republicans anymore. That basically the country has gone through what we would consider to be realignment and de-alignment. The South has realigned from being the once solid Democratic South to becoming basically much more the base of the Republican Party. But people have also de-aligned themselves, and that's been part of the rise of independence.
And I wonder if as that continues then, I mean, you know, projecting forward, does that mean that eventually these folks maybe will go into one or the other camp, or this is just going to be kind of our new normal?
Well, in terms of registration, I think what we're going to see in the state is the state eventually end up kind of divided into thirds. Third of us Democrats, third of us Republicans, third of us independents. But within those independents, you really have to be careful in terms of, are they true independents? Are they pure independents? Do they go in and say, I'm going to vote Republican for this office, but Democrat for this? You know, the classic kind of split ticket person. Actually, if you push them and say, well, do you lean one way or do you lean the other? They vote 80 to 90% of the time for that party's candidate, just as strong partisans do as well. So it's really kind of they want to appear independent.
Right.
They want to say, oh, I'm going to make up my mind and it feels good and I'm not associated with those wacko birds or those, you know, whack jobs in either party. But they actually do perform the same rate as those partisans do. So that's the real controversy.
But what makes it, I think what's interesting about this is, first of all, they're less reliable. So that makes it difficult right there. You can't count on them to the same degree. And then, as Michael and Jim have mentioned, there are some who are truly swing voters and don't know which way they're going to go. And so if you're the political campaign guy, all of a sudden, or lady, you've got to figure out, okay, now how am I going to get the message to this person? What's going to motivate them to vote? How many of them do I think I can vote? And oh, by the way, I'm still dealing with my base voters over here that I have to make sure turn out. Yes, they're more reliable, but they still have to be spoken to. So that is the dynamic that you're seeing with all these races, particularly so many close races.
And I think what you're talking about is the partisan engaged or the political engaged voter versus the apathetic kind of voter. I mean, the apathetic kind of voter doesn't really care, isn't probably really paying attention. But there are these partisan political engaged voters that do show up and do get engaged and do act as if they are partisan affiliated. They just claim themselves as independents.
And let's spend a little bit more time now kind of defining who these voters are. So do we have breakdowns by age, race, those sorts of things?
They generally tend to be, particularly in this state, much younger, under the age of 40. They're kind of balanced in terms of their racial composition in comparison to state averages. 71% of unaffiliated voters. No, I'm sorry. That's, let's see, where am I here? That's statewide. So 71% of statewide voters are white. Among unaffiliateds, they're 78% white. Among Democrats, it's only 48% white. So it kind of reflects the state as a whole. Women tend to be much more unaffiliated voters than men do. So there's a lot going on there in terms of who these people are, actually.
And do we have income data?
We don't have it for unaffiliated voters. We don't have it for registration voters.
And if you're listening and are an independent voter, we'd love to hear from you as well. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org, or you can search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter and just tell us a little bit about yourself. So do we have much of an idea of what their sort of big ticket issues are? If there are particular policies that independent voters think, okay, this is something that's going to get me to the polls, or this is something that I feel a particular way about?
Well, I think independent voters generally reflect the concerns of people who are part of a party. I mean, they're concerned about the economy and other things. One thing I noticed about a poll that came out a couple months ago that was that independent voters cared more about Obamacare. It was more important to them than it was to other voters as a whole. Republican voters obviously feel very strongly about the Affordable Care Act and health care. And Democrats obviously tend to support it more than the others do. But the independents were concerned about it, and to them it registered as a pretty big issue. And I talked to one operative for Republican, Tom Tillis, who's running for the Senate, and they can identify those voters for whom health care is a big issue and target them specifically. And just because you're unaffiliated doesn't mean that political parties aren't going to target you. My wife is an unaffiliated voter who's a good voter. She votes all the time. And so she's been getting mailers from Americans for Prosperity, the conservative group, bashing Kay Hagan, the Democrat. And they're seemingly, purposely going after women to fight the so-called war on women. So unaffiliated voters are still an important group for campaigns to go after.
Well, and you certainly hear that in the K. Hagan spots where, you know, I'm not too far left, I'm not too far right, I'm right in the middle. No.
The Goldilocks campaign.
Right, yeah, the Goldilocks campaign. I mean, that clearly is part of the audience that's being targeted there. You know, the other thing I was going to mention as we're going through all these numbers is, you know, Gallup does these numbers in each state. And when they asked people in North Carolina to identify themselves in terms of a party, it was 42-41 Democrats, which is, you know, it's just interesting when you look at that gap, 2.8 million registered versus 2 million. It's a lot closer, obviously.
Yeah.
And do we know if, so has your wife been getting mailers from the Hagan campaign as well?
No, as a matter of fact, not yet. Maybe she will now, but no.
Well, and do you think that that's because Republicans see more of an opportunity with these folks in our state than the Democrats do?
You know, I think that they're conscious of the gender gaps in a lot of polls. Kay Hagan's got a pretty wide gap among women voters, as you know, and Tom Tillis, conversely, has a gender gap among men. So I think they're trying to, you know, cut their losses on the Republican side, cut their losses, and keep or get as many women out as possible.
And then, Michael, as you mentioned about how there are they're more likely to be female independent voters mm-hmm. than male, then potentially this is just an example of playing those numbers. Okay, if there are going to be more independent voters who are female, then we should be targeting those folks if we need to make gains with female voters.
Right.
Campaign strategy has become very scientific. I mean, you can basically get a CD of all the registered voters in North Carolina, see when they showed up, see their party affiliation, see their address, and that's how campaigns are now kind of micro-targeting down into the voters. They're actually, we were talking about it before the program, we don't see these kind of big campaign rallies with the candidates anymore. It's much more targeted on the ground. We pay a lot of attention to the air war going on because of all the campaign ads, but really it's all about who do you get to show up and how do you motivate them to show up. And we know that registered Democrats or self-identified Democrats are going to vote 90% of the time that way. Same thing with Republicans. You know, that those are great banks to go ahead and get those folks to vote early, like with mail-in ballots right now, and then shift your focus to perhaps going after the undecided independent voters.
And one of the things that all those points you make are absolutely correct, and what is complicated and challenging for Democrats in particular is that voting patterns, voters tend to be more reliable the better off they are economically.
Yeah.
And Republicans tend to be more affluent and more educated. And so the Democrats have that uphill battle to fight. And the other thing that they must fight is when President Obama's at the top of the ticket, they're very motivated to vote. But in off-year elections, Democrats have suffered more than Republicans. And so that's why, as we look to November, that's why you see 10,000 volunteers for Kay Hagan going out, knocking on doors, trying to encourage people to realize how important this is to them and to the party.
And before we get into this upcoming election, do we have an idea of how important independent voters have been in North Carolina's past elections?
Well, certainly, in terms of voter turnout, they are important, but not as important as the partisans. If you look back at 2012, among registered Democrats, 70% of them showed up. Among registered Republicans, 70% of them showed up. Among registered unaffiliateds, only 60% of them showed up. So certainly, if you're talking about a very close swing kind of state, every vote matters. And those votes can matter. But the question from a campaign strategy point of view is, do you increase your base and perhaps the reliability of that, or do you take a chance and go after these folks that may or may not show up, particularly in midterm elections like this one that we can talk later about?
I don't know if unaffiliated voters appreciate yet what an influence they can have in primaries where a lot of elections are determined. We were talking a minute ago about the Senate primary, the Republican Senate primary in Mississippi this year, where a Tea Party challenger was going against the incumbent Republican, and they went to a runoff, and a lot of Democratic voters mm-hmm. came and voted for the Republican incumbent because he wasn't with the Tea Party. And so people can make a difference. Independents or even the other party can make a difference in primaries if they take it seriously.
Well, I think that is such an important point because so many races, other than really governor and the two mm-hmm. U.S. senators.
Statewide.
Yeah. I mean, there are only a couple of races. The rest of them are essentially decided in those primaries.
Yep.
And we've actually had some comments from listeners about the primaries. So Chris emailed that most registered independents he knows lean Republican. He's a registered Democrat but would like to be able to vote in the primaries. He was frustrated, for example, that he couldn't vote in the Charlotte mayoral primary for Edwin Peacock. Mm-hmm. So he's asking, do you think North Carolina could end up having open primaries anytime soon? Because as of now, it's a little complicated, but like semi-open, I suppose?
Well, semi-closed. In that you have to either be a member of the registered political party that you want to vote in or an unaffiliated. Now, in South Carolina, they don't have party registration, but you have to go in during the primary ballot and ask for the specific ballot that you want, either the Democratic or the Republican ballot. You know, there are cases where folks do switch to unaffiliated so they can pick which political party they want to necessarily, quote unquote, play in. But the likelihood is those folks aren't going to show up because they aren't as engaged as the core partisans within those parties that do show up and that do make decisions in terms of who's going to be running in November.
And another comment, John on Facebook said it's absurd having your choices restricted in primaries the way he does in North Carolina. He says he shouldn't have to choose one party or the other. And if you support people in different parties, obviously there's no way in primaries, at least, to vote for both of them.
Well, you actually can. In some states, they have what's called the jungle primary or the open blanket primary system. And that way you get the ballot that has a listing for both political parties on it. And you can kind of bounce back and forth between, well, I want to vote in the Democratic primary for governor, but then I want to bounce over to the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. You know,
not unwieldy at all.
Definitely not. But there is that opportunity out there that some states have adopted, not all.
You know, another irony, I think, is that I think it was in the late 80s that North Carolina went to the semi-open or semi-closed primaries that we have now, where Republicans let unaffiliateds vote in their primary and Democrats did the same. And I think the purpose of it then, at least in their eyes, was that it would draw people to their party. If you got used to voting in the Republican primary, you'd become a Republican. But, you know, what's happened now, I mean, the parties are really weaker than they were 20 or 30 years ago. You see all the stuff you see today is really by the campaigns. It's not necessarily by the parties, and the parties have less strength, I think.
And do we know how important these independent voters will end up being this November?
Well, if we did, we could make a lot of money. We'd really be floating in it. I mean, it's funny because the first answer you hear about any midterm non-presidential election is it's all about the base.
Because they show up.
Yeah, anyone who's under 20 can have the song trotted out too. But it's so close that you can't really just sort of make your living on that now, and certainly in North Carolina. And so that goes back to what I was saying earlier is you know that you need this sliver, but it's so hard to determine how much of that audience is really out there for the taking.
Yeah.
It goes back to what Michael was talking about, too, about micro-targeting. I mean, campaigns are very, very sophisticated now. You see ads on Facebook and everything. And so, you know, they know which of the unaffiliated voters go to vote. You know, there's a lot of unaffiliated independents that stay home repeatedly, that only vote in presidential elections. But there's also a slice of them that vote in primaries and off-year elections, and they know which ones those are.
If you look back at 2010, the last midterm election, at the time, registered unaffiliated voters were 24% of the eligible pool. Okay, in the election, they were only 18% of all the ballots cast. So they dramatically underperform. Republicans were 32% of registration, but they were 37% of the ballots cast. So they basically overperformed. And so in midterm elections, what we generally tend to see in this state is a much more Republican-oriented electorate than we do in presidential ones.
And Jim, it's interesting to me the layers of this that you just kind of laid out. So if I'm a political operative, it's not just, okay, these are some independent voters, let's go after them. It's I need to figure out which ones actually vote, first and foremost. Then of those who vote, which ones actually kind of are just sort of Democrats and kind of are Republicans. Yeah. And then you get down to who's actually a swing voter.
Yeah, which ones voted in the Republican primary in the last election, or which ones voted Democratic. So you can slice and dice these down to it.
And then you start getting the Americans for Prosperity mailer, or, you know, because they've looked at the numbers and sifted and said, well, this person, maybe they can be moved this way or that.
It's amazing what a science this all breaks down to now.
It really has. I mean, in terms of political campaigning and the management of campaigns, this has become much more scientific because of the amount of information that is out there and the capability to say this person more closely aligns this way or this way has kind of the social characteristics.
We're going to take another short break, and then we'll be back discussing more on independent voters. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
C
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and James McElroy and Deal for over a half century, providing legal services and counsel to individuals and businesses. JMDLaw.com. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, the growing international coalition in the fight against ISIS. There's a growing number of countries who are joining the U.S.-led fight against ISIS, one of the world's most well-funded terrorist groups. Join the discussion for prospects for a broad international coalition. That's on The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 in about 20 minutes here on 90.7 WFAE. If you'd like to join Charlotte Talks today, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter.
WFAE's Public Conversations get people talking.
Is there any way for a homeowner to know in advance what type of homeowners association they're dealing with? I hear that there are some that are overly zealous. And maybe
if
some
we've
that
got
aren't.
Greenway space, if we've got floodplain that is now being developed, what are we doing to preserve something?
Listen to WFAE for details on future community forums and come join the conversation.
This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk. The number of independent voters in North Carolina has nearly doubled in the past decade. We're discussing who they are and what impact they may have this November. Jim Morrill from the Charlotte Observer, Eric Spanberg from the Charlotte Business Journal, and Michael Bitzer from Catawba College are with me in studio. We'd also love to hear from you. You can email charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter. And we actually have an email from John, who is 57, male, and unaffiliated. He says, quote, "I despise both parties. The Republicans have been taking
Ain't
over.
That America.
John says the Republicans have been taken over by their crazies, and the Democrats are disorganized weenies who won't fight back and who run from their accomplishments like Obamacare. He says at the moment he despises Republicans more, but you have this sort of run away from both as opposed to, you know, someone who wants to align themselves as I'm just unaffiliated.
Yeah, and I think this is the running thread through all of this is that people are so frustrated with the parties. Yeah. And if you look at the approval ratings, whether it's the General Assembly in Raleigh, whether it's Congress, President Obama, I mean, it's just there are not a lot of top of the charts here, are there?
There really isn't. And his comment was really interesting because as you read it, I kind of thought, okay, he's sounding more and more like a Democrat, but he is disgusted by both political parties. And that's kind of symptomatic, I think, of the broader swath of independents. Yes, they do align one way or the other, but they are so disgusted. You know, Congress with 9%, the General Assembly, I think, at 19, 20%.
They're going to get to 20.
They're going to get to 20, but they're knocking on the door. But you know, what has happened is that we have become this kind of system where the parties are pure, for lack of a better term. But the system, the institutional structure of our government is not necessarily designed to handle these kind of, you know, very hardcore parties because we divide power up. We give a little bit to the legislature. We give a little bit to the courts. We give a little bit to the president. And we say, okay, now y'all go play nice with each other. And when the parties become these kind of ideologically rigid and coherent entities, it doesn't help to say, you've got to share power with this other entity, and I'm not willing to do that. And you hear that specifically from folks like Tea Party Republicans.
Well, and this goes back to what Jim was saying about, you know, primaries, and you get
exactly
into purity of districts. You know, you obviously are getting candidates who are more pure mm-hmm. in terms of their party ideology,
right,
you know, than if you have more of a mixed district, so to speak. You just don't have many of those, whether you're talking about Congress or many other offices right now.
You know, you've seen efforts nationally and even in the Carolinas to go a different route, a third, not even a third party, just a third way. There's something called No Labels. A former Republican consultant named Mark McKinnon is involved with that. Was it 2 years ago you had a group that tried to have national meetings, or it was an online vote to get some candidate, presidential candidates, a presidential ticket that was unaffiliated, unaligned, which didn't go very far. And now in South Carolina, you have an effort, and I forgot what it's called, But you have a prominent Democrat and a prominent Republican in South Carolina who are trying to go sort of the non-party route.
And I want to pick up on one of Eric's points about gerrymandering. Yes, that is symptomatic of the broader problem that we have, but it's also a problem based on who we are and where we live. If you believe in the idea that we, the citizens, have basically sorted ourselves and are starting to live in like-minded communities, so you've got somebody who lives Absolutely. In downtown Charlotte or, you know, in this area, and then they go to Huntersville or some other area that is very much opposite of what they are, they almost feel like they're in a foreign territory. The early comment that one of the listeners put in, you know, she said, I'm a registered Democrat, but I've got to be unaffiliated because there are so many Republicans here. That's out of the norm. And so what we have are all these pockets of like-minded individuals, and then gerrymandering compounds that to basically put them into like-minded districts. And then we say, you know, why can't Democrats and Republicans work together? Well, because all of us are looking at things in very different lenses and political perspectives. And so it kind of is incumbent upon us as well.
If you go from Ballantyne to Plaza Midwood, you just say the names of the neighborhoods and you sort of have that image in your head of which way they're voting and leaning.
You know, another effort, I mentioned some national efforts to get around that. And in North Carolina, you have an effort to have nonpartisan redistricting, which would be a lot of people look at as a step in the right direction, because you take a lot of the gerrymandering out and you'd have districts that were more competitive, at least on paper.
Former Mayor Van Roots involved in.
Yeah,
right.
And off of this is really getting to an answer to a question we received from Ginny, who sent an email. If there is such a rise in independence, why have conservatives taken control in North Carolina's state government?
That's 2010, and that's called the Tea Party Revolution. And when you have an overabundance of Republicans showing up, they were threatened, they were mad, and when you energize folks like that, they will generally tend to show up. And elections matter, but elections that end in the zero matter even more because of the power of redistricting.
Redraw, that's right.
And that was, you know, the wave that I think Democrats really didn't expect. Yeah, they won in 2008, but boy, they got hammered in 2010. And when you have the power to redraw the rules of the game, basically the lines, you get to determine who gets to win and who doesn't.
And that's why 2 years later, you saw Republicans do even better.
Yep.
Because they drew the lines in 2010 in the legislative session, and in 2012 they won supermajorities in both houses of the state legislature.
And so now, in a lot of ways, I mean, it feels like Republicans have a lock on that majority in the General Assembly. I mean, we'll see. But even with Moral Mondays and all those things, it looks like, because of those districts, they're in pretty good shape.
It's like basically, other than the statewide races, after the new census comes out every 10 years, you can really go a long way with, especially, I mean, we've been discussing how scientific it can get. We can look at exactly which voters live where and draw the districts so that you can create more safe districts for your party.
And I think in that regard, that's why Hagan Tillis and the 2016 governor's race, that really will give you a sense of how angry or happy the populace as a whole is about what's happened in the General Assembly the last couple of years, because these other races are already in districts where you kind of know the outcome.
Yeah.
And we've also been mentioning sort of different approaches to handling these things with the different parties. Francesca in South Carolina emailed, what do you guys think about the relatively new California system of nonpartisan blanket primary in terms of getting more people out, how effective that has been?
In that system, and that's going to be interesting to see in a couple of election cycles how that really plays out. Basically, you can have two members of the same party running against each other in the general election. So you've got Democrats against Democrats, Republicans against Republicans. It basically just throws everything up into the air and say, let the voters decide who's going to be the representatives and not have it necessarily connected to the parties themselves.
I guess maybe a question on top of that, though, would be, is there actually any movement in our state legislature to change any of these things? I mean, are we pretty set? I'm not familiar with any reporting on.
Well, the state house has passed a couple of years ago, I think they passed the nonpartisan redistricting commission, which stalled in the Senate. And it depends on who you talk to now. There's going to be some effort to revive that next year. By at least one Democrat, one Republican, but they have an entrenched interest in not passing it.
Motivation for the party in power is, well, little bit low.
Yeah.
It's the same reason that Republicans used to call for this when Democrats were in control, and Democrats were absolutely
not. Shoes on the other foot.
Now all of a sudden the Democrats want it and the Republicans are in control. Yep. So standard. North Carolina has been more and more a presidential battleground state lately. The Democratic National Convention here in Charlotte in 2012 is a perfect example of that. How does the rise of independent voters factor into that, how we fit into the sort of national electoral politics?
Well, North Carolina in 2008 and in 2012 was the classic swing state. I mean, it was the state decided by the closest margin. Barack Obama won this state by 0.3% in 2008. Mitt Romney won it by, I think it was around 3 percentage points. So North Carolina is going to be in the bullseye because statewide, we are so much of a deep purple. It's like what Eric said, once you get down the ballot and beyond statewide races, it really is a Republican tilt in terms of General Assembly, city councils, those kinds of things. But certainly North Carolina, in my estimation, there's no reason why 2016 is not going to be epic in terms of the presidential contest, because you've got you've got a U.S. Senate race with Richard Burr, and you've got the governor's race. And that's kind of the big three all packed into one. I think North Carolina is going to continue to be. And the question is, will those independents really swing the state one way or the other? Or will the parties more rely on, can we blow up our base and elevate those numbers and really not have to worry about those independent voters?
So I have some good news for listeners. You know, your TVs have been inundated with Tillis and Hagan ads for more than a year. But the great news is, really, 2016 gets kicked off, you know, almost instantly
the day
after the election. So we have that. But going back to the other question, I think this constant influx of people, like we were talking about earlier, that also continues to sort of ratchet up that purple factor.
Yep.
And also off of that, potentially add the number of electoral points, essentially, that North Carolina will be worth. It's both we're becoming more purple and, from a presidential standpoint, because of the electoral system, worth more points.
Yeah. I mean, Republicans have got to have this state in order to have a competitive chance of winning 270 electoral votes. Basically, what Barack Obama did in 2008 was able to crack the solid Republican South at the presidential level by winning Virginia, Florida, and North Carolina. He also won three critical southwestern states, Colorado, New Mexico, and Nevada. If Republicans are going to win the White House, they've got to figure out a way to recapture those states that swung back to the Democrats.
And how purple is this state? I mean, we hear that it's a battleground. We know that independent numbers are increasing, but...
Well, I mean, I think you look at 2008, Barack Obama won by 14,000 votes. Mm-hmm. And I think it was what? They were each in the 2.2 million range. So, I mean, that's tiny. I mean, that shows you how competitive it is. And I think we're going to see that with Tillis and Hagan next month.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's going to be – I think it's a purple state. And, you know, for all the reasons that we've talked about, people moving in, a growing number of unaffiliated voters. And, you know, that's why it comes down to – you know, in the Senate race at least, it comes down to turnout and who can get their people out. And I think independents play on the margins in that scenario. I think both parties are going to go to their bases, you know, because they know they can turn them out. And then the unaffiliateds will, you know – be on top of that.
One other key thing about the unaffiliateds, though, is that they tend to break one way or another in a race, and that means that because they're less reliable, one faction is going to be more motivated all of a sudden, and they're going to go out and vote en masse, and the others who don't favor one of the candidates are likely to stay home. So that could decide the race.
Watch the numbers in terms of early voting. Right now, North Carolinians are already mailing in their ballots, and Democrats actually have a pretty good sizable lead in terms of mail-in ballots. But once you start seeing people show up in person for early voting, watch where those registration numbers are. Generally, it's going to be much more skewed to Democrats and Republicans, and unaffiliateds may wait until actually Election Day to decide, A, am I going to show up, and B, who am I going to vote for?
Interesting. So whereas, you know, we've heard about a divide between Democrats leading Republicans in early voting, independent voters are more likely to just come on Election Day?
They are much more likely to come on Election Day than they are, because that may show some of the indecisiveness.
And somebody has to – one of these campaigns has to capture the imagination of that group.
Yeah.
And we'll find out who.
Yeah. in 5 weeks.
That's right.
Dennis in Iredell County emails, do your guests find that independents in North Carolina vote against their own best interests as often as those with party affiliation? He says he finds many of his conservative friends would benefit greatly from liberal policies. I'm sure that they would all vehemently disagree with that, but they always vote conservative, he says.
There is something to that. I mean, basically what you see in terms of the partisanship of one's brain really kind of frames the issue in that regard. And so, yeah, I mean, there is, you know, if anything is described as liberal, conservatives are immediately going to discount it. Anything described as conservative, liberals are going to discount. So it really does play into
next thing you know, we're all unaffiliated. Oh, never mind.
Well, could this increase in independents have an impact on how deeply divided the two parties are? We've talked a lot this morning about how, even though there is North Carolina's purple, there is this increase. At the same time, you know, you look at the polling numbers, you look at how the parties are acting, they seem to be more and more entrenched as opposed to more and more open.
Well, I mean, it's a sort of a chicken and egg thing, I think. Yeah. You know, people are sort of jumping off the ship because they're unhappy with the extremity of the parties, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, I think. So that's why it's going to continue going, or it looks like it's going to continue going this direction. I can't imagine what could happen to make people say, you know what, I don't want to be unaffiliated or independent. I want to get back with this party or that party because they are so effective and we see so many good things happening in Washington, D.C. right now, or Raleigh, or wherever you may be.
I mean, just look at the primaries. I mean, I think Republican primaries have gotten more conservative, you know, more conservative in a lot of ways. Democratic primaries, more liberal. I mean, look at the 12th district primary that we just had here. I mean, everybody was for minimum wage. They were for raising it much higher than other people have talked about. It was very liberal, very liberal debate. And conversely, you see that on the conservative side in Republican primaries.
And like Michael says, what 40% of people are probably moderate.
Right.
And so they're not being spoken to as much. So they go unaffiliated.
And I guess part of the reason they're not being spoken to as much is because there's a better chance that they're not going to turn out. Whereas if focus on my base, they're absolutely going to turn out and vote.
You hate to say people are going where the money is in politics.
but candidates are also risk averse. I mean, they want to win the election. And if they know that there's a reliable vote there and not there, they're going to go after the reliable vote.
That's all the time we have today. Michael Bitzer is a political science professor at Catawba College and author of WFAE's The Party Line blog. Jim Morrill is a political reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and Eric Spanberg is a reporter for the Charlotte Business Journal. Guys, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Michael Tomczyk. Thank you for listening. Charlotte Talks with Mike.